This is the Android Buffet Podcast, episode number 552, recorded August 19th, 2021, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Android Buffet Podcast, back in the primary studio.
Primary studio?
Yeah, the one that, because I have been moving around a lot over the last year, I've spent a lot less time in, even though it has the best of the equipment.
And hopefully the best of the equipment has the best of the audio quality, so everybody should be happy this week.
Well, it's always back to that. That would assume that I was here constantly tweaking and improving it instead of leaving and coming back. So since the last time I recorded here, I did fix the last audio problem I had by putting in a splitter.
So what you're saying is that mediocre hardware that is well-tuned is better than excellent hardware that is not so well-tuned.
Yeah, it sounds like a fortune cookie, doesn't it? But either way, so the last time I was recording here, the problem was that I didn't have enough outputs from the microphone that I use to record to you. So as a result, there were some issues. Also, I just realized I forgot to start the backup recording, but yeah, we're getting there. I need like a checklist, but yeah, well, anyway. So what I did was the day after that occurred, I got myself a splitter and wired it up. But this is the first time I've actually been here to use it. So right now the microphone goes into an XLR splitter, which goes into an audio interface. Well, actually it goes into two audio interfaces. One interfaces the XLR with the computer so you can hear me. That's one USB audio interface. The other one has that audio and the audio coming out of the Zoom computer into, and that goes into the computer that does the recording. And then there's an analog app that goes directly into the streaming encoder, which merges it in with the image of the show notes. Or in some theoretical future, something other than the show notes. So that's it.
Cool. Yay. I'm sure you'll figure it out.
Well, again, a lot of things to figure out. It's been a lot of things have happened in the last week. My Pine Time showed up.
Well, actually, you have a Pine Time.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to tell us about it. You're going to tell us about it, right?
Yeah. So I put my Pine Time on my wrist and discovered my first Pine Time problem.
The band is too small.
Do you have that problem too on watches?
No, but you've mentioned it happening before.
Well, we've met. I'm a big guy. I have big arms.
You know, interestingly, if the Samsung Galaxy watches, one of the options is whether you get a small medium wristband or a medium large wristband.
A lot of watches don't give you a choice, so you have to get an alternative wristband.
I always get an alternative wristband anyway because I'm not big on the whole rubber or leather thing. I prefer a metal wristband.
Yeah, so I did replace it with a metal wristband, except I discovered, so on Monday, I ordered a wristband. It showed up, and then I discovered that it did not fit because there was a problem. So I ordered I had to order a second wristband, which fit perfectly, except for the fact that it wasn't long enough. So I had to order a second copy of the wristband that fit well on the watch, but wasn't long enough so that I could dismantle it and add additional links to the.
Oh, that's cool. One.
So I cannibalized two wristbands. So ultimately speaking, not including shipping, the wristband costs more than the watch.
Yes, but it's a wristband you like.
Yeah, and so I've been playing with the Pine Time. It's not perfect, but it is a good experience for me to play with it. Not. There are some limitations of the firmware. So there are a few problems. So the program that interfaces the watch to the phone is called Gadget Bridge, which is an open source thing that also works with the Pebble and a few other things. So it was designed to do notifications to like wrist-based devices, and it supports a few of them. So there are a few problems. Right now, Infinitime, which is the firmware that comes stock on the PineTime, doesn't support dismissing notifications. It's a future feature. So the notification
really, apparently that's weird.
Yeah. They haven't built it yet. Early days. So on the phone side, apparently there's no command you can send to tell it to dismiss notifications on the watch. So there are apparently a few things. If you want to do it the right way, if you dismiss notifications on the watch, it should tell the phone to dismiss the corresponding notification on the phone. But barring that, if I'm reading the issues on GitHub correctly, there's a proposal to do what the alternative firmware for the PineTime does, which is apparently Wasp OS, which dismisses them locally only. So it dismisses them on the watch, but doesn't dismiss them on the phone at the same time. So apparently the proposal is to enable to build the local feature, and then at some point in the future, expand that and replace it with the superior feature.
Okay.
Work in progress.
I'm sure there were many, many, many things on the must do before release. So,
well, when you're writing a from scratch open source watch firmware, admittedly they don't have the dismissing of notifications, but I can play a little game on my watch. I wouldn't have put that as high as dismissing notifications. But so I told you when I ordered it that I wanted like an inexpensive watch to ride it out until the future comes. So all I really wanted were some basic notifications and the time. So we'll see. I'm going to give it a chance.
Does it keep good time?
Well, it's synced to your phone. So if your phone keeps good time, it keeps good. When I did when I had to do a reset on it, it reset itself to zero. So without the phone, well, again, there's no, without the phone updating it periodically, it will not have to keep good time. Like many things. But again, I'm sure there's more that I have to learn, so I'll be playing with it a bit more. But in the midst of this, I returned to my apartment for a few reasons, including an attempt to have my bathroom fixed. There've been some issues in it. But on a positive note, when they had the walls open, I was able to get them to stick an Ethernet cable in there.
Nice.
Not for use in the bathroom. I can't see why you might want an Ethernet cable in the bathroom.
Makes it easier to build a magic mirror.
Yeah, but the Ethernet cable in question is behind the shower.
It's what?
Behind the shower. When they had the wall open, when they were fixing the water damage, I had them string a cable inside the back wall between the room that's to the left of the bathroom and the room that's to the right of the bathroom.
You have an Ethernet port in your shower?
No, I have an Ethernet cable running in the wall behind the shower.
Oh, okay, but where does it go? I mean, it's got
to
come out.
It goes between the room to the left of the shower and the room to the right of the shower.
So you don't have a cable, or you don't have an Ethernet port in the shower or in the bathroom?
No, I had them run the cable through the bathroom.
Okay.
That's a massive improvement. This goes back a few years when Fios was installed in the building. They made a mistake. So when the installers came to actually hook up Fios inside the building after they ran the fiber optic to a node on the back of the building, so there's a box outside that all the fiber comes to, and then it goes out from there to the individual apartments. When they wired that to this building, they made what could be considered a mistake, or at least I did. No, I considered it a mistake. I didn't make one. But they told me when they came to install that their equipment that converts the fiber optic to coaxial and Ethernet had to be placed near the breaker box. However, the breaker boxes in these buildings are in the front. And the hookup for the fiber optics is in the back. So you can see the problem here.
But that's what cables are for.
Yes, but they wanted to drive the cable through the middle of my apartment. As in, they wanted to run a cable, you know, tacking it around door frames, etc. I did not find that aesthetically pleasing, so I made them run it around the building.
Okay.
I'm convinced at one point that cable will break. They will refuse to replace it, and they will want to run it through the building. So while the wall was open, I put an Ethernet cable in it.
Cool. Good job.
So, yeah, it doesn't go all the way, but it goes through the major wall. So the biggest block was that in order to run a cable from the front of the building to the back of the building to where the breaker box is, I could either run it through the bulk of my apartment or I can run it again through where the bathroom is, which is in the middle of my apartment, which I couldn't have done when the wall was closed. So now the wall is sealed with an Ethernet cable, and the cable has about 2 feet of cable on each side that goes into the adjoining room that I just had tacked. So at some point I can put a jack on each end and I can run it the rest of the way. So it's future proofing. They also found a bunch of other weird stuff.
Opening walls up always results in finding interesting things. It's okay.
There was no floor under my bathtub.
There often isn't.
As in dirt. As in the ground with nothing under it.
Are you on the first floor?
Yes.
And there wasn't even a slab? Or I don't know, do y'all do slabs?
Yes, there is a slab elsewhere. But for some odd reason, they did not put any concrete under the bathtub.
You didn't need it.
Actually, I did. In other places in the building where they didn't put concrete and they put... that's where the termites showed up. Concrete keeps termites out of your bathroom.
Okay.
I got them to... The people who were doing the work, I got them to put some concrete down before they restored it. But it's just one of those weird things. You know, I am not a home construction expert, but I'm reasonably certain there shouldn't be a hole under my bathtub. That there should be something supporting it. More than dirt. Explains a lot, though. Anyway, they built a whole row of identical houses, so I'm assuming I should tell all of my neighbors that this, if they've never replaced this particular piece in the building, that under it will be nothing. Anyway, stories aside, that's been my week. I am sitting here where I usually record this podcast when I'm here, surrounded by the plastic sheeting that keeps this room dirt free from what they're doing. They're supposed to come back tomorrow and paint now that they've sealed up and spackled everything. Then they can do something that I've been looking forward to all week. They can put the toilet back.
Toilet is good.
Yeah, it's really hard to live in an apartment without a toilet.
And that's why I have 8 of them.
I live in a 1-bedroom. Where would I put 8 toilets?
I didn't say you would put 8 toilets, but I lived in a house with a woman and 1 bathroom and said, never again. And then I lived in a house with 2 women and 2 bathrooms and said, never again. Now I live in a house with 2 women and 8 bathrooms. And
that seems like a lot of bathrooms. That seems like a lot of bathrooms for 3 people.
Yep. But there's always one available.
There would be always one available if you had only 3 bathtubs, 2 bathrooms.
Well, we have
5 spares.
So, and you know, 2 floors.
So. That's also just in case you invite friends over so that they each have their own bathroom.
Actually, yes. Every one of our bedrooms has its own bathroom. And we have 2 half baths, social bathrooms, and we have a bathroom out by the pool.
They're called social bathrooms?
Yeah, half baths.
No, I've heard the term half bath. I've never heard social bathroom.
Yeah, that's half bath, social bath. Yep.
By the way, Daryl has joined us and has added that sometimes sand is put under a bathtub to support it. This makes me feel good on two levels. Number one, that it means that the stream is working because he can hear me. And two, that is a potentially good reason. This was not sand. This was just, you could dig down, as in this was the literal ground under it. And the bathtub was not fiberglass, as he suggested. This was, if it was put under there again as a support and then under that was something to retain it, fine, but no. Anyway, it's solved now. So that was my week. I had the pine time. I did some various tasks around here, and I watched these people do stuff. And now I may, because of them, I may have to get a new microwave, but that's a whole other story. You know when you have random people in your house and they do random things that you can't explain?
Yes.
Yeah. They did some of that. Also, they all live in New York City. I don't know why they don't know our recycling rules. They kept putting garbage in my recycling bin. I had to go root it out because I don't want to get a ticket. But anyway, minor problems like that aside, hopefully I'll be happy when they're done. My bathroom will not have a leak in it anymore. Actually, by my calculation, four separate and distinct leaks.
So, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Also, I get a new toilet out of it. I went for the extra high.
I completely understand.
I'm a wild person. Anyway, jokes aside about my crazy lifestyle, let's talk about some Android news.
There's Android news?
Yeah, apparently if you have a Nest Hub, you may get apps on your hub. So they've discovered that a device that looks like a little television might be worthy of having applications. What do you think? Would you like a Nest Hub with applications?
I think so, sure. I mean, it's a screen, right?
I think it depends what the applications are. I'm a little worried about the idea of an app store.
Well,
I think that might make it a bit cluttered. But on the other hand, if the only things that can go onto a Nest Hub get decided on by Google, that's also a problem.
That's true.
So that would, there are a lot of examples I can think of. For example, I would love it if I could get Zoom on a Nest Hub. That would be very convenient because of all the Zoom related things that my family does. And other than me, none of them want to deal with a computer. So having, watching my parents attend like these board meetings for their local homeowners association, like by huddling around their cell phone, I think there's a better way.
Sure.
In fact, just last week before this program, I attended a Zoom lecture.
You attended a Zoom lecture?
Yes, the Greater Astorica Historical Society in New York City was doing a virtual walking tour of the South Street Seaport. So I got to experience the history and wonder of the South Street Seaport without leaving my chair.
That's crazy.
Not really. I've been on, the last time I went on a tour with the guy who gave this lecture, I did not get up for the rest of the night. There's a lot of walking on those tours. You know why? They're walking tours.
That was fun.
No, at some point, I probably will go on another one. But the simple truth is, right now, I really don't feel like going to Manhattan. There are reasons for that, but a lot going on. Also, there's been other reasons. I've been elsewhere. So, again, I would love it if I could do that. I would love it if I can get like Zoom on a bunch of different things I'd like to, like on a Chromecast.
Sure.
You can get Zoom on a Fire TV Cube.
I believe we have discussed that, yes.
So guess what? One of my family's life milestones is coming up, so I bought them a Cube.
Ah.
It was on sale this week. I figured, why not? of course, any technology gift that I give to anybody comes with free technical support. So maybe I should stop giving people technology gifts. That's a solution to the problem. On the other hand, I'd be doing it anyway. So, but either way, that's one of the interesting uses. Moving along, chat bubbles, which I've never been particularly fond of, may be replaced by chips. Have you seen chips? No. So chips are, you're like these little small visual items at the top. I think chips look nicer. I never liked the bubbles.
Okay.
Did you like chat bubbles?
I like chat bubbles.
I found them annoying. They go over things. I sort of like the idea, oh, it's at the top of the screen and everything else sort of shrinks around it. So it's like a little, I like the idea of my notifications being, if they're persistent, being in a little bar at the top and they don't go over what I'm trying to do, but they're still visible. Anyway, here's another one. There's a new book that came out, How Android Was Bought by Google. So there's, you can read an excerpt in the link in the show notes, but you can also buy the book at Amazon for $9.99. So Jerry, will you be buying a copy of this book that has the secret history of Android from the early days?
I don't know, man. So much to read.
Well, I thought about buying it, but I held off for one reason. When I looked at the Amazon notation, it said that the publisher had been notified that the Kindle version had some sort of quality issues. And while if they fix the quality issues, they always automatically update your copy of the book, I figured I would wait to see it before they're to see if somebody commented that it had been fixed.
All right.
I have other things to read. I'm not saying I'm going to wait indefinitely, but I'll figure it out in a few days. But I think, you know, as somebody who talks about Android every Thursday at 9 p.m., with the occasional exception, I should possibly read a book about the early history of Android.
Yes. That would make sense.
Yes, I can deduct it as a business expense. This is a business, right? We get paid, don't we?
We do. I don't know by who, and they certainly owe us some money.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go on strike. Anyway, I was thinking of you when I saw one of the best stories where they were talking about the best to-do app, because we were talking about to-do apps recently.
We were, and I was happy to see that my current favorite ranks at number one, Todoist.
Yeah. I still haven't gotten organized enough to try a new to-do app. It is on my to-do list, but since I don't have a to-do list, I can't cross it off. So my first to-do is to get a to-do list. Now, if you're an Android Auto user, apparently Android Auto has realized that you're fumbling around trying to find the right media to listen to while you're driving. So now it's going to give you automatic media suggestions from your options.
Okay.
And this next one, Google Calendar will allow you to mark your working locations and hours to keep employers aware of your active status. And I keep reading this one over and over again, because I'm still a little confused, and also whether or not there's a version of this feature that would work for me, because I don't want my employers to know anything, but I want to keep track of this in a different way.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand this.
So starting at the end of the month, you can mark working locations and hours on the calendar. So what that means is if you enable feature, when you have, like, you can say what your working hours are and where they are. So you can say, I'm working today, but I'm from the office, I'm working from home, I'm working from an unspecified location, or I'm working from somewhere else.
I don't think it matters if you're, okay. I've worked remote for the last 20 years, and I don't think it should matter to my employer where I am, as long as I'm getting my work done.
Apparently, there's businesses where they send people home for the pandemic, they're trying to adapt culturally to the solution. I really should have muted that. So, Jerry, you're telling me that I'm having technical difficulties again with completely different equipment? That's just disappointing. Jerry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. Which makes me wonder, is it possible that since we're using Zoom, we've been on Zoom for about half an hour, is this Zoom deprioritizing us and telling us we need to wrap it up?
Well, consider that is possible because it seems to happen at roughly the same point, and it's different computers in different locations. Now, I'm in my apartment. Now, I am very much willing to believe that Spectrum in the woods, which is what I use when I'm not in my apartment, which has a much lower upstream bandwidth, might be causing trouble. And I did buy a wire to switch from wireless. Now, here I'm wired up, and the bandwidth on Fios is symmetrical. So according to the last speed test I ran, I have at least 500 megabits up and down.
Which should be enough.
Should be like 50 times what I would need for this.
Although, so maybe since we've been talking about this, you've sounded fine.
Yeah, but my question is, maybe you are right. Maybe the free conversations do get deprioritized under heavy load. So we're in prime time. We're in, you know, between 9 and 10 o'clock Eastern. Maybe it just happens to be that there are a lot of people using Zoom at this time. Or maybe if you have the free account, Zoom occasionally reminds you why you might want to pay the money.
That could be. Although I don't think you would encourage people to pay for your product by making the quality worse.
Well, the other thing is I keep getting these messages, your internet is unstable, which, as I said, I find very strange because there's enough stuff on this network. So I have no really good explanation, but we could always try meet again.
We could. Let's discuss after the show today. Let's discuss.
Yeah, I'm back to, I want everything to work, and then there are these little things. Just before this show, I solved a completely different problem because I was trying to get the streaming working. When I came back, my desktop wouldn't connect over Ethernet. And I thought maybe the Ethernet cable went bad. So I swapped it, and it wasn't that. And I finally figured out tonight that I had to reset my switch. But for some reason, my switch was blocking communication. So everything on Wi-Fi was working perfectly, but anything on wired that tried to get a fresh IP address wasn't for some reason.
Well, that's weird.
Well, it is a smart switch that can technically be managed, but I've never changed the default settings because I've never had time. But so who knows? I just restarted and suddenly everything came up. So I know for next time. Eventually, I'll troubleshoot it. I also fixed a problem with my DVR box. So I've done a bunch of little things while I was here. But it's sort of these strange things where you look at everything and you say, wait a minute, I didn't do anything. Why is this not working? It was working last week. I didn't touch anything. So, it's that sort of thing that really annoys me because then you sit there trying to figure out how do you find the problem? And then you ask somebody, let's say you come to your friend Jerry and you say, Jerry, do you have any ideas? And Jerry gives you some ideas and none of them work. Because Jerry's on the other side of the country.
And Jerry doesn't have any ideas.
Yeah. Well, maybe not about this specifically. So troubleshooting is a pain in the neck. And then you do something, you said, okay, I don't want to do this on the show. I'm going to do a simulated event. And the simulated event works perfectly. There are no errors in the simulation. But it's a simulation, so when you go live, you still have the same problem. And you know what that makes me want to do, Jerry?
Carry on with the news?
Well, I was going to say, it makes me want to set a custom status using Google Chat on Android. So my status is going to be frustrated. So that should be my Google Chat status.
I should probably install that because some of the people I talk to are on Hangouts, and every time I open it up, it says, you know.
Yeah. I know. I just gave up and moved over. Bear in mind that I'm the only device that uses Google Chat is my phone. On my computer, it's running through Pigeon using the experimental purple Google Chat, which is currently under development. So I have to compile any new updates myself. So I have the GitHub repo. I have to pull the repository, run the make file, and then install it into my Pigeon directory.
The whole Pigeon thing is just amazing to me.
Well, I've made some modifications recently. Not only do I have Google Chat going in there, and I disabled the Hangouts plugin, which was developed by the same developer, but I have, you know, the plugin for any network somebody might want to find me on. So I have Telegram in there. I put in WhatsApp, which is an interesting thing. I actually put in Slack because I hate having Slack windows open.
Yep.
So I do not connect any of these networks. I just connect to Pigeon. Now, I also had to join Discord, and I tried doing that through Pigeon, but I decided to do that through Bitlby, which Bitlby bridges IM services to IRC. So all of my Discord conversations are technically coming through an IRC client. Because why not?
Because why not?
Yeah, unfortunately, on Sunday, I was upgrading the plugin, the Discord plugin for Bitlby, and that caused it to crash. And since Bitlby was sending notifications to my phone, it sent about 15,000 notifications in 3 minutes.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah, because there was a queue going, I had shut off the service that was generating the notifications, and the phone was still queuing up notifications for 5 minutes after that. This is what happens when I have time to work on projects. Anyway, weird things.
I don't know if it's a good thing.
Are you going to set a custom status?
I don't even want to install it.
Well, as I said, I'm going to add a status right now. So I'm going to call my status recording. And I'm going to say that I want to clear that status in half an hour. So right now, if you found me on Google Chat, you would see that my status no longer says active. It now says recording.
Interestingly, it doesn't.
Well, aren't you still using, you said you were using Hangouts. I did.
Well, I'm talking about the chat that's embedded in it still says active.
Interesting.
I did install Google Chat, and I have the chat up. And
okay, maybe they haven't quite finished the interface, but I just said it.
Okay.
See, this is what we call a learning experience.
They say they got a thing, but that doesn't mean they actually got a thing.
Yeah. So a few other things. Google, I mentioned the Google Calendar thing. So let me see, what did I miss here? Oh, yes. Matter has been delayed until 2022.
That made me sad originally, and then I realized 2022 is only a couple months away.
I thought you were going to say that made me sad, but then I decided it didn't matter.
Ah! Boy, that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I'm saying I thought you would take that opportunity.
So sad. Now I'm super sad that I missed that opportunity. Good call.
But Matter does have a lot of potential, but we haven't yet figured out if it's going to be a potential that it will appreciate. We're all you, I, and a lot of people who listen are all sort of not necessarily embedded in the more commercial side of home automation. A lot of us are sort of the do-it-yourself type to varying degrees, as in from the extremely I just built the thing myself to I just want it to work. I want to tweak it to work the way I want.
Yeah.
That's why I ordered myself a new fan controller for the fan in this room and discovered that it was allegedly delivered on the 23rd, but has disappeared somewhere between here and China. So after fighting with them and trying to explain to them that it couldn't have been left in a parcel locker because I don't have a parcel locker, I decided I'm going to give them one more chance and give them money again, even though I gave them money for something I didn't end up getting. It happens sometimes. Lately, things have been disappearing. But UPS.
That's not cool.
Well, no. earlier in the week, I had to have another conversation with Amazon because a package wasn't delivered. And I have a camera, a doorbell camera. And I went back to the time that the package was allegedly delivered and looked, you know, like an hour before and an hour afterwards, and nobody walked up the stairs. So how could the package have been delivered? If it was delivered, it definitely wasn't delivered to where it was supposed to be delivered. And this is happening regularly where they're insisting they delivered something. And I'm sitting there and saying, I have a camera. Would you like to see the footage? No one was there. Oh, just wait 2 days. Sometimes they mark, this is the conversation I'm having. Sometimes they mark it as if they delivered it, even though they didn't. What's the point of having package tracking if you lie on it?
But you anyway. Have such a different experience with that stuff than I do. It's crazy.
With the United Parcel Service?
Yeah.
Occasionally the United States Postal Service? Mostly it's UPS. I don't have this problem with FedEx, but you don't get to choose who Amazon sends your packages with. But anyway, moving along, a simple fix could limit location data sharing. Now, this is an interesting one if you are a privacy enthusiast. Even if you're not a privacy enthusiast, it's a very interesting article. Ooh. So if you look at the article, which is from Ars Technica, which cites a technical paper, apparently some researchers have a plan to limit how much bulk location data they can get from cell towers. So they've come up with this scheme called Pretty Good Phone Privacy that can mask wireless users' locations from carriers with a simple software upgrade that any carrier can adopt without an infrastructure.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So essentially, there would be a portal on every device using an app or an operating system function that runs a regular check with the billing server to confirm that a user is in good standing. After that, the system would hand out tokens that don't identify the specific device but indicate whether the wireless account is paid up. When the device attempts to connect to a cell tower, the exchange will funnel through this portal for a yes or no on whether to provide service.
Interesting.
Essentially, once confirmed that you are a paying customer, you no longer, you've essentially decoupled, it gives you a random token which cannot be traced, which means it can't track you after that point. So the only time to track you is at the reauthentication phase when it's giving out these tokens. Now, what's the likelihood that carriers will implement such a fear?
Maybe probably not very high.
Well, you never
considering,
know.
Yeah, that no, I don't know. It's going to come down to customer pressure, and I don't think there is the will.
Okay, how about this? We'll change the subject. Google Duo has turned 5 years old, and both the author of the story and I hope it turns 6.
Wow. I didn't realize it's been around that long, especially since I'm still yet to ever use it.
Oh, I use it regularly because I have the Lenovo smart display hooked up. So I use it to occasionally call family members. The only reason I haven't used it much in the last few months is that the family members who I was using it to call have been hanging around with me a lot. So I don't need to call them. But I just got a call earlier this evening from my uncle, who has been recovering from illness and had been in a rehab facility and just recently got out and is recovering at home. And I sent him a Lenovo smart display so that I could call him on that and talk to him, which I thought was a nice idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he called me and said it was very nice of you to send me that. And what's it for? So he will be waiting until his son or one of his more technically minded grandchildren comes over to help him figure out how to set it up. I'm referring to Duo specifically. He did figure out how to set it up so that he's been using it to watch like little videos and see little news stories. And he wanted to thank me for that. So he is enjoying it. I thought it was the perfect thing to have by your bedside when you're resting.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So hopefully he'll be able to get Duo hooked up and I'll be able to call him and see how he's doing because I have not been able to see him. The last time any member of my family wanted to see him, he was not, for medical reasons, not able to see people. and he's in Florida, so I'm not there. So now I can't see him for distance reasons, unless I go back down there, which I'm sure I'll do at some point, but I can't right now. The room I was working at and recording from down there is being renovated as well. My parents, before they left, saw an opportunity with somebody working down the hall to get rid of their 1970s popcorn ceiling. Apparently, the guy did some work and has not yet finished, despite the fact he was supposed to be finished in July. I'm starting to get a really negative view of contractors, but that's neither here nor there. MasterCard is phasing out magnetic strips starting in 2024 and says that they'll all be gone by 2033.
I can say this.
It's a dated technology. So the problem is card places that have not adopted either contactless, which they MasterCard says has been steadily increasing and has been accelerated by the pandemic because people don't want to touch each other. And also the EMV chips that were put out a few years ago.
Well, so I got to admit, man, I still use my electronic stripe every now and then because sometimes the chip just doesn't want to work.
Yeah. But if you have a card that does contactless and it has the chip, you have two different ways of doing it.
And I think that, yeah, in a few more years, yeah, I can see this. This doesn't particularly scare me.
It doesn't scare me either. And they're saying that they're going to start issuing cards that don't have magnetic strips starting in just under 3 years. That's not exactly soon.
Right.
It'll come sooner than we think, but that's not exactly tomorrow. Which means they have to set a date eventually. The same way that T-Mobile has to set a date for getting rid of their 3G network. Eventually, what? You have to give up on the thing. But, you know, you don't want to do it so quickly that, people are going to be surprised. And you don't want to do it essentially so slowly that you never get around to it. Look at how Microsoft's solution. They spent all these years maintaining their older version of their operating system. And finally, they said, we don't want to do this anymore. We're just going to give everybody who has an active copy a free upgrade to our latest version so we don't have to maintain this technical debt. That's a simplified explanation of what Microsoft did, but it's essentially accurate.
I find no problem with your explanation.
Well, also, you have the other part of it, which I was sort of wondering. If you don't have the magnetic strip, can your credit card be smaller?
Can your credit card be what?
Smaller. I thought I'd sort of ask this. We know what the size of the chip is because you can see it embedded in the plastic. So I'm not sure if there's a correlation. If, you know, I know the magnetic strip has stuff encoded on it, but does it have to be that length in order to encode what's being encoded? And I've never really looked into
it. Really doesn't, but for some reason, people who study human or ergonomics, human interactions with things, credit cards are the perfect size.
That's the question. Are they?
No, I mean, it's for a human to handle it. Credit cards are the perfect size.
All credit cards have been made by ISO 7810 ID1 standard. So let's see here. The reason appears to apply the golden ratio. So the card is 1 by 1.6, the same ratio that is used for a book, computer, monitor, A4 paper, movie screen, etc. So apparently there is a reason for that ratio, but the question is why that particular size? I feel like I need to read ISO 7810.
It's related to how humans are built.
Here we are.
Interestingly, credit cards and packs of cigarettes are the exact same size for the very same reason.
Yeah. So I have it here. According to this, ISO 7810 dictates four card sizes, ID 1, 2, 3, and 0. ID 1 is a standard common payment card used for driver's license, personal identity cards, automated fare collection systems, retail loyalty cards, credit cards, etc., which is 85.6 by 59.98 millimeters, or 3 3/8 by 2 1/8 inches. Then they have a ID2, which is apparently used for visas, the French and Roman identity card, and was previously used by the German identity card. You have ID3, which is even larger, which is commonly used for passport booklets. And then ID0, which is 25 by 15 millimeters, which is usually used for the size of a mini SIM. And then, of course, you have a ID0 inside of an ID1, which is when you have a chip embedded in your ID1.
Yep.
So the question is, why can't there be a new standard for smaller cards?
Because humans are still the same size.
Yes, but my wallet keeps getting messy.
I think they could totally be thinner.
Well, I'm saying thinner. I'm not saying like tiny. I'm saying that look at all of the wasted space on a credit card. It could be half the size.
It's not wasted. It is that size because you're human.
I don't get that rationale. I'm going to research this a bit more.
It's built for your hands, for easy handling, for comfortable in your hand. I don't know, man. I didn't do the math. It's the perfect size for something that needs to be kept track of.
Yeah, but I understand the reason why they're all the same size is because it's a standard. I'm just saying, why is that the standard? Why do we not have a smaller standard? And I still don't understand that. So I'm going to have to read up on this and see if I can learn something. If anybody knows why it's that particular size, which I still haven't finished researching, I'm just curious now. I understand why all cards have to be a standard size. There's a rationale for that, but why was that chosen as the standard size? Anyway, moving along, Roku and Spectrum have made up. So in December, Roku and Spectrum parted ways, and this annoyed me because, as I said, in certain places I use Spectrum, and I had gotten rid of all of the family's cable boxes in that location and replaced them with Roku's. So you could watch live TV that way, because then you don't have to pay a monthly rate. And it worked fine. And even during this breakup period from December to this week, it still worked, but every time you loaded it up, it would flash a message that do not uninstall this channel because we won't let you reinstall it. But the reason I wanted to mention this is this is sort of a dangerous trend.
Well, people are going to disagree.
No,
more. And when I say people, I mean companies.
Yeah, I'm more talking about the fact that now in order to put your software onto a device that people have paid for, you have to have carriage agreements with the hardware manufacturer.
Wouldn't That's it be cool if side loading was a thing on Roku?
Well, this is why I sort of, you know, am more, if this happens again, I may be tempted to move over to the Chromecast, and I have to see if it actually has if there's an Android TV Spectrum app. But we'll see. So, that brings us to one final comment from Daryl that I was saving for the other news section. Apparently, Apple is refusing to engrave their phones with anything that might upset the Chinese government. So apparently, that includes you can't have them engraved on the back of the phone like Taiwan rules.
Seriously?
According to Daryl, yes.
That's Darryl kind of amusing.
Citation, but I believe Daryl. Because he's Daryl.
Yep. Daryl is beyond reproach.
Well, no one's perfect 100% of the time, but I believe in Daryl's sincerity that he did research this issue appropriately. I make mistakes all the time. I'm sure you do as well, Jerry.
Pish posh. Perish the thought.
Anyway, so that brings us to the end of this week. And hopefully by next week, I'll have new exciting stories because I'm going to Legoland.
Yay!
Yes, I wanted to visit Legoland, New York to see what all the buzz was about. Have you ever been to a Legoland, Jer?
Oh, yeah.
Is it fun for people of all ages? Because
yes.
I am accompanying my nieces and nephews there, and I think that their definition of fun may differ from mine.
It is fun for people of all ages, but it is not fun for people of all temperaments. Some people just don't know how to have fun, in which case, even a Legoland ain't going to help you.
I just, you know, I traditionally have had fun at Disneyland and Disney World because I always feel like they recognize that not everybody coming there is like a five-year-old, so they have to diversify their offerings. So even the younger rides are, you know, have something for older crowds. But I do not know if it will be the same thing at Legoland, that the entertainment will not be, will have sort of a more diverse opportunity. But if not, you know, I get to see the Lego construction, I get to enjoy it, and unlike my nieces and nephews, I'm not staying overnight.
What?
They're going to stay at the Legoland Hotel. That's where you, your room all has Lego theme and
oh yeah,
everything is Lego. I may be, you know, I'm not going to say cheap, but I just don't see the point of staying at a hotel like 40 minutes from where I live.
Saves you
40 minutes of driving
each way.
I suppose. I'm just more saying that I just don't feel like it. I think one day, they're going to go for 2 days. I think that one day of Legoland is enough for me. That and I have a job. At least I think I have a job. Nobody's told me I haven't, so I just assume that if I show up, they'll continue to pay me. That's usually a safe bet. Anyway, so hopefully next week things will work out better. So do you want to adjourn and have another podcast at the same time next week?
Yes, let's do this again. I like this. This was great.
I'll have you know that Thursday evenings have become one of my 7 favorite days of the week because of this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, top 7. Top 8.
It's right up there with Wednesday.
Okay.
Well, Wednesday this summer is bingo night. Gets me out of the house. It's $2 and an endless amount of fun as you watch a bunch of people trying to find little numbers on a square and a bingo caller who can't seem to remember that they've picked a bingo shape that doesn't include any ends. Anyway, that's a whole list. But just to end this in bingo style, since I was mentioning it, clear your cards.
Alrighty.
Pleasure.
Goodbye. Bye, folks.